Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And I'm Nico Bakulich.
And let's get biblical.
But before we do that, we have to cover the ground rules again.
Yes.
You know why? Because people aren't listening. People aren't paying attention.
I mean, I don't know if they are. They seem to be. No one's challenged us about, like, which one of us was raised Christian and which one of us was raised Jewish.
That's true. That's true.
By the way, I was the one raised Christian.
And I was the one raised as a non-believing sort of Jew.
And I'm reading the New International Version of the Bible.
And I'm reading the New Revised Standard Version of the Bible.
And this is not a Bible study podcast.
Also, there may be objectionable material contained within both the things that are from the Bible and the things that aren't. The things that are from our beautiful little brains.
Mainly the things that are from the Bible, the objectionable parts.
Probably.
So shall we jump right in?
Yes. Well, how are you doing?
What do you mean?
Well, I'm just seeing how you're doing.
Well, I'm fucking sick of this Bible.
I got bad news for you, Bappo. We're not even halfway through.
So today we're talking about the book of Nehemiah.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing to fucking say to introduce the book of Nehemiah.
The pre-roll essay in my Bible was literally like four lines long.
Mine literally just said, see Ezra.
That's some lazy annotating right there. Nivies, you got to get on this. Improve that. Does anybody have anything to say about this book? We were just talking about this off the air. I did extra research and like checked through all the notes and stuff. I didn't find anything interesting.
Yeah, there's nothing interesting
about this book. You should turn off this podcast right now by any means.
But like, you know, if you're going to turn off one episode. Okay. When we left off last week, Book of Ezra. The Jews had returned to Jerusalem after the Babylonian exile, thanks to the Persian kings. And this one Persian king, Artaxerxes, sent a Jewish guy, Ezra, back to Jerusalem to be in charge of like the religious side of things and enforce Jewish law and the Persian king's law.
Right.
He paid for Ezra to fix up the temple. However, some officials, some like Persian officials, kind of convinced him not to let the Jews rebuild the walls around Jerusalem.
Right, because that would be like a sign of rebellion or whatever.
Right. So that happened, and the book of Ezra ended with the Jews just expelling all the non-Jewish wives that various Jewish men had taken, and also their children.
And offering some unspecified punishment to the men that had taken those wives.
Yeah, just ended with a big shit list.
Yes. So at the beginning of Nehemiah here, we are not introduced at all to the main character.
Correct.
Instead, we're thrust into his perspective.
Yes. He's speaking in first person.
He is apparently a cupbearer for the king.
Yes.
In Babylon.
Which is just like, why does there need to be a full-time job for someone to just serve wine to the king?
Oh, but it's more important than that. I mean, cupbearing is like a symbolic thing as well. Like, you'd probably taste the wine, you'd be a combo poison taster, you'd be a highly trusted servant. You're a cupbearer.
All right.
It's like a butler.
Okay. That doesn't give me a whole lot of... I've never had a butler either.
You never had a butler?
Well...
Oh, you've had a manservant.
I've had a manservant, but
me for 9 years. Uh-oh. Sliggity slam.
Oh, marriage. Men and women. Heterosexuality. Anyway, Nehemiah is serving Artaxerxes his wine, and old Uncle Art notices that he's looking sad. He says, "Why the long face, buddy?" And I like that it says like he had never seen me sad before. And
presumably, all the other days of his slavery in the king's palace
were just ecstatic.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh, you know, how can I be happy when Jerusalem is doing..."
Sits wall-less.
So wall-less. And he's like, "Can I go and rebuild it?" And Artaxerxes inexplicably says, yes.
Well, he checks it with his wife first, with the old ball and chain, if you know what I'm talking about.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Okay, can you read me that passage?
You want to scroll up that passage?
Yeah.
All right.
Do you need me to provide the Foley work? Do you need me to make some page-turning sounds?
No. Well, he did, I guess he didn't really check with the queen.
Yeah.
My bad. He said, it says, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my ancestors' graves, so that I may rebuild it. The king said to me, the queen was also sitting beside him.
Yeah.
How long will you be gone, and when will you return?
So, why did you think that he consulted with his wife? Did your Bible have a footnote about it?
No.
Because here's what my Bible's footnote has to say about this. Literally, all it says is that she's sitting beside him. That's it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. She literally just sits there. And here is what my fucking Bible says. Demaspia, apparently that's her name, may have used her influence with the king. The Achaemenid court was notorious for the great influence exercised by the royal women. Especially domineering was Amestris, the cruel wife of Xerxes and mother of Artaxerxes. This woman is literally just sitting there, and my Bible has to go on a rant about how women have too much power, and this other woman, who isn't even in the scene, is too bossy. I'm just trying to read about a young man named Nehemiah and his construction project.
He may be very old for all we know.
And I don't need my fucking Bible to go on this bitches be tripping manifesto against women's suffrage. Bad enough that I have to figure out which Persian kings comes which because some ancient scribe couldn't even figure out what chronological order was. Now I have to also read about this fucking shit about how women are too bossy. Okay, so whatever. The stupid king gives permission to Nehemiah inexplicably.
Well, yeah. I like how that he asks, it's like, how long is it going to take? Like,
yeah.
this cup is not going to bear itself.
And Nehemiah's like, I don't know, a while. So he sends him, but he, like, makes him the governor.
Does he make him the governor?
And Nehemiah's the governor. What job skills did he learn as a cupbearer? Like, what is the career progression from cupbearer to governor?
That's what I'm saying. I think cupbearer, I think he might be, you know, not showing enough respect to our cupbearer listeners out there. Those who have worked hard to attain that position. I think it might be like a pretty highly placed position in the servanthood.
What skills do you learn as a cupbearer that are applicable to governorship?
Well, organization. So like cupbearer, I don't know if this is true, but he's definitely, if not the highest ranked servant, he's one of the highest ranked servants of the king, which means he's got to organize a lot of stuff in the house.
Okay.
And I would, in biblical fashion, hearken you back to a young man named Joseph.
Yeah.
Who also was the cupbearer for his master.
Wait, he wasn't the cupbearer. He was just in jail with the cupbearer.
No, but he was the head of house for that Egyptian guy after he got out of jail.
Oh. But he wasn't the cupbearer. He was like the head of house. He was like the butler.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The cupbearer is like the butler.
But he was he was in jail with the cupbearers.
Oh, he was in jail with the cupbearer.
A separate office.
It's a separate office, but that's what I'm saying. He may not be the head of house, but he's like up there.
And didn't the cupbearer get executed?
Either the cupbearer or the cook got executed.
The baker,
I can't remember which
one. I don't remember which. Well, in any case.
What I'm saying is the man has a big house. It's hard to organize. Those organizational skills have got to come in handy, especially when your main goal as governor is building some walls.
What? Being a cocktail waitress has nothing to do with building walls.
Well, now who's being reductive?
Oh, I stayed up so late reading this book. It sucks so bad. Okay, so he fucking goes to fucking Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
He makes a circuit to kind of evaluate the status of the
He does
wall.
It secretly. He
yes,
does it at night
anybody.
To make sure that nobody sees him.
So he goes
because he knows instinctively that there are people out there plotting against him.
Yeah.
Which in some minds would be paranoia, but in this one, which is with its odd mix between omniscient third person and first person narrative, just comes off as, you know,
canny.
Yeah, brilliant prophecy.
He makes a circuit from the Jackal Well and the Dung Gate
mm-hmm.
to the Fountain Gate and the King's Pool.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like one side of Jerusalem is like a lot better than the other.
It does. It does.
And then he, I don't know, then he starts rebuilding the wall.
He does. Yeah. He recruits the locals. Ezra is already there.
Yeah.
Ezra's already there leading. So this is like, it's like Ezra and Nehemiah are like leading the two halves of the rebuilding of Jerusalem. One is, the first is the spiritual half, and the second is the physical
half. The wall
half.
And so he starts like rebuilding the wall. What the fuck ever? Some Persian
not
officials.
Not having fun, are you?
Some Persian officials try to stop him.
These aren't Persian officials.
Well, they're like officials in the Persian bureaucracy, so they're not ethnically Persian.
Oh, I see. I see. I thought they were representing the locals because most of them are local people, like Ammonites. They're Ammonites
well,
against
him. Well, I
think
him. The Ammonites, Tobiah the Ammonite. So there's three. There's three dudes that are named. Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arab.
Right. Arab isn't local, but...
Yeah, I don't think Horonite is either, have we? I don't remember coming across that before.
I can't say with confidence that we haven't, but it doesn't come to mind.
So I think Tobiah is the one that's like the only one that's from like a local ethnicity. I could be wrong. But they're like in the Persian bureaucracy, and they're trying to give him shit. And he responds in the dorkiest way possible. The God of heaven will give us success, but as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem, nor any claim or historic right to it. It's like, I told them they had no historic right to it. Neener, neener, neener.
When these three fellows, these three rude boys, are discussing the fact that Nehemiah has come to town to rebuild the walls, they ask, what are these feeble Jews doing in my book?
I don't think mine used that word, but they are. They're like, you know, kind of like schoolyard bullies. They kind of make fun of the Jews.
Yeah. And I don't 100% understand their motivation. I understand Tobiah's motivation because the Ammonites were historically displaced by the Jews when they returned to the Holy Land. So I can understand having an axe to grind about that. I don't really get why a Horonite and an Arab would be so upset about somebody rebuilding the walls in Jerusalem.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to like curry favor in the Persian bureaucracy. But like, I don't fucking know.
It sounds like a more interesting story than the one we're reading.
Honestly, kind of. Chapter 3 is like all the different parts of the wall and everyone who repaired them. Sheep gate?
Oh yeah, Eliashib the priest rebuilds the sheep gate. Did you
fish
know that?
Fish gate?
There's the fish gate. Broad wall.
Tower of the ovens. The house of the heroes. There's Watergate. There's literally Watergate.
Watergate is in there, yeah.
Also Horsegate. That sounds like a scandal I really don't want to know about.
Well, you already know about Piggate.
You leave David Cameron out of this.
He's had a rough day.
This podcast is delayed by a week. His rough day came a while ago. Inspection gate. So they're like rebuilding it all, and these three bullies make fun of them, and
they try to slow down the process in pretty ineffectual ways.
Yeah, they're just trying to like demoralize them. They say that like if a fox jumped up on the wall, it would knock the wall over.
Yeah, they just like make fun of their craftsmanship,
yeah.
And that's going to stop it. Yeah. Like this is like the Jews have faced some serious adversity in their time up to this point. These three chuckle fucks are not...
Like talking about a fox isn't going to faze them.
Yeah, and also like they keep threatening to attack and never do, possibly because Nehemiah tells all his people, half of you hold weapons all day and half of you work on the wall.
He designates half of them as soldiers. And it's like... You always have to carry our weapons, like even when you go get water.
Yes. And it says, we will never even take our clothes off.
By the way, this should be Donald Trump's favorite Bible verse. Like he said his favorite Bible verse is an eye for an eye. But like this one has, we've got building a wall. We've got evil foreigners. We've got like bullying tactics, like dumb insults. It's got all his favorite stuff.
But the hero is Nehemiah, who's like more humble.
Yeah, but like Donald Trump doesn't understand who's the hero. He thinks the bullies are the hero.
But the bullies don't want to build the wall.
Oh, good point. Good point. Well, I'll have to take this up with him the next time I see him.
Okay.
When we're comparing notes on our manservants.
He definitely has manservants.
No, he has like 12 manservants. One for every hour before noon. And then they start over again.
One for every hour before noon.
Okay, we're moving on. I guess like everyone's starving.
There's a famine going on, yeah. The narrative gets interrupted a little bit
here. They're all either like building the wall or guarding the people building the wall.
Right.
So there's nobody to like farm shit.
That's a good point.
And they're like selling their kids into slavery.
Yeah, but the main problem is that they're like mortgaging their family to other Jews. That's the main problem.
It would be fine if they were mortgaging their families to foreigners.
I mean, it wouldn't be fine, but like it wouldn't be a point of precedent in the Bible, I don't think. Because Nehemiah goes to the nobles and the local lords and the elders and whatever, and he's like, hey, by the way, you're charging interest on loans that you're giving to the people in the community. You shouldn't do that. You're taking people into slavery. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, my bad. They just drop it, I guess.
It's all presented in first person, which like makes him sound like a total dweeb, you know? It's like, it sounds like that, you know, like that chain email from like 1999 where like the atheist teacher is like, you have to deny Christ if I drop this piece of chalk. And then like the Christian student defeats him and like an eagle swoops down and like carves the Jesus fish in his back or whatever.
Whoa, that got intense.
That's what happens in that email, right?
I haven't
read it in a while.
I haven't been keeping up on my chain emails.
Although it has been forwarded to me more than once in all seriousness. You know, okay, so like here's the quote from the Bible. I pondered them in my mind and then accused the nobles and officials. I told them, you are exacting usury from your own countrymen. They kept quiet because they could find nothing to say. So I continued.
I see what you're saying.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. He stood there stupidly looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. His stupid atheist face.
Yeah.
With his grim, faithless expression.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. He also tells them, what you are doing is not good.
I thought it was good. But now I see it is not good.
The powers of oratory
that seems
are
like
strong.
The opposite of good. So,
also in that little section, it notes that the previous governor of Jerusalem had been so corrupt and collected so much power for himself that his allotment of food was enormous. He was getting like an ox every day and six sheep and like tons of wine and everything like that. And Nehemiah makes a great point to point out that, or takes great pain, excuse me, to point out that he's sharing that allotment with 150 people.
Yes, yeah. Even though he's like still taking it.
It doesn't really make any sense. I guess the allotment comes from the Persian government, but like...
No, I think it comes from the Jews. Like, I think it's like a Levite type of tithing type of thing.
Oh, really?
I could be wrong.
But they had stopped tithing for the Levites because Nehemiah reintroduces that later.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like this is like the governor's allowance from the like local taxes.
And it's like an ox, six sheep, and some poultry. And he's like, but I shared that. Like, I didn't eat that all.
Yeah.
Like, my predecessor ate an ox, six sheep, and several poultry every day. But, I'm not selfish like that.
You could never eat an ox every day.
I know. Like, obviously that guy was sharing it with people. He couldn't eat that.
But he makes it very clear.
And then
clear.
He's like, I didn't take anything on top of that. It's like, oh, you didn't take anything on top of, enough food for 200 people? Like, congratulations. I hate this book, baby.
In a certain way, it seems like it's trying to lay out an example of a humble, you know, dedicated person.
Yeah.
But the first person...
It doesn't work when it's in the first person.
Makes it seem super braggy.
It doesn't work.
But luckily, it's going to switch randomly out of first person and into third person several times during this book.
It is?
Yeah, a couple of times. A couple of times it'll refer to the governor Nehemiah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not sure.
Stuff is all mixed up.
I'm not sure mine did that.
Really? I could totally understand somebody editing that later and being like, let's just make this consistent. Because like about 80% of it is in first person. And then there's about 20% that's in third person.
Maybe that was like in the parts that my eyes kind of glazed over, which was like 90% of it. So
those are also likely the parts that are from different sources.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, there, the genealogical, there was a lot of lists. Like, I didn't pay that much
attention. Yeah, the genealogical stuff is probably from different sources than the narrative stuff.
So anyway, the bullies try to lure Nehemiah.
This is so dumb.
To meet them on the plane of Ono.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, oh, no. I will not meet you there. Oh, no. He's in a trap. He doesn't go.
Yeah. But the way they do it is just like they invite him out to a meeting at a place that's obviously a trap.
Yeah, like, why would you do that?
And they do it 4 times, yeah. He says.
Yeah. It's like when it didn't work the first like 2 times.
And he kept being like, hey, I'm building a wall. I'm really busy. And then the 4th time, it's like they try to blackmail him.
They send him a letter accusing him of like rebelling.
Yeah. They'll be like, oh, the king's not going to be happy when he hears that you're, you know, that Jerusalem might be rebelling because it's building these fancy new walls. Maybe you want to come and talk to us before we like send a letter like that.
And then here's the letter that he writes to them. It says, nothing like what you are saying is happening. You are just making it up out of your head. Sounds like
slamming.
Like, sounds like Digimon Otis. Like, it just sounds like someone who does not understand. Someone who's like way too earnest.
Wait,
for their
what did you say? Digimon Otis?
Yeah, you know Digimon Otis.
No, please tell me.
A real man with a real dedication to Digimon.
Yeah,
and he like doesn't. He's like way too earnest for his own good.
Yep.
And honestly, like Drill like owes his quote unquote career to Digimon Otis, and like reproducing that tone.
That's
of
his
tweet.
That's his Salieri. That's
yeah, totally, totally. And that's what it sounds like when you say nothing like what you are saying is happening. then some false prophets try to get him to like hide in the temple from the bullies.
Yes.
But he doesn't do it because he knows it'd be a sin for whatever fucking
and,
reason.
And
that
he
I
says
don't
like
care
a man like me would never hide in the temple from these men.
I don't know what that means. I don't even care. Also, he starts complaining that like, so we talked about Tobiah the Ammonite is like maybe a more local guy.
Right.
And he's like kind of in the community by marriage.
Yes.
And so Nehemiah, of course, is not happy about that. As we learned from the Book of Ezra, racial purity is very important during this era of the Kingdom of Judah. And so
there's no place for Tobiah in the temple and in the congregation.
And here's a good quote. They kept reporting that they is like the community, his community. They kept reporting to me his good deeds and then telling him what I said. Like, this dude is such a fucking dork. He's like, they kept telling him it's not fair. Just like deal with your shit. If you don't like what Tobiah's doing, then like,
you're the governor. I'm sure you can
put
make
a
something
stop
happen.
To it.
Yeah.
Don't just complain about how other people were like telling him what you said. I think I need to take a break from this fucking book.
Okay, we're gonna take a quick break. You're gonna hear some music, and then we'll be right back with more Sunday School Dropouts, high energy, having fun with the Bible. Yeah. Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. We are talking about Nehemiah. This is Nico.
And I'm Lauren.
Hello.
And we're going to jump back in.
Oh, my.
The Book of Nehemiah.
This is getting grim.
Which,
listeners, she might not make it through.
Next next chapter, we've got some fucking lists. Hurrah.
Yeah, so Nehemiah finishes all the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing that you would do naturally to celebrate that is to enroll everybody in the genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
So he tells us about who all the fuck was there and who their dad was.
They have dumb names.
Well, it feels a little harsh. They're just names.
One of them is named Bunny. Do you want your dad to be named Bunny?
You want my dad to be named Bunny?
Yeah.
It would be confusing.
Yeah.
So, no.
Okay.
Unless he were always named Bunny, in which case, that'd be fine. It's just a name, after all. Unless it gave him some sort of complex.
Well,
and that, you know, reflected on me in some way.
You're going through a whole thing right now.
You asked me a question.
All right.
My duty is to take your question seriously.
Well, that's very kind of you. But we're not taking this seriously because it's just a bunch of names about who, like, guards what fucking part of the wall. Yeah. And who staffs the temple. Mm-hmm. And I don't care.
True. But then Ezra shows up and they have a big party. And Ezra reads the Torah to the people.
Yep.
For a full half day.
Yes.
And the people are so...
This is at Watergate, by the way.
Mm-hmm. People are so moved by the allegations of wiretapping.
People, that they say, Ezra is not a crook.
That's right. People are so moved by the reading of the Torah, they start to weep. And he says, no, this is not a day for weeping. This is not a day for crying.
I also like how it presents this. It says, like, Ezra told them this is not a day for weeping because they had been weeping.
Yeah.
It's like, just chronological order, people.
Yeah, I also feel like good communication, too, is important. Like, if you said, like, hey, we're going to have a big reading of the Torah today. Here's the overall atmosphere I'm going for, you know? Just lay out some of the expectations beforehand.
Maybe if he had, like, given out some kind of, you know, some party favors. Maybe if he'd, like, given everybody like, kind of like a voucher, you know, for pretzel or whatever.
I was just a packet, just an intro packet.
Oh, know? just a little.
Like a little folder of info. Yeah.
Just like a text. Just text it to them.
Yeah, with like a little address, like a little letter from Ezra in the front. Be like, hey, thanks for coming to the party. Here's a little info about what you can expect and like an agenda.
And then he says, go and enjoy choice food and sweet drinks.
Mine says, go and eat fat and drink sweet wine.
Eat fat?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Which sounds, honestly, when I read that, I was like, that sounds pretty good.
I want to just eat pure fat and drink sweet wine.
Yeah, it's not pure fat, but you know.
What is it?
It's the fatty parts of the animal.
Isn't that pure fat?
You'll never understand.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm a vegetarian. I haven't eaten meat in a long time.
I know.
Actually, that's not true. I've eaten like a little bit of poultry recently due to health problems. We don't need to get into this.
You brought it up.
So, yeah, they have. Then they celebrate Sukkot.
Mm-hmm. They all hop in a booth.
Yep. Charge tolls to everybody. Everybody's happy.
You know who else liked booths? Little fellow named Doctor Who.
I thought you were going to say John Wilkes. Then after these happy celebrations, they get to Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, involves all the, you know, fasting, wearing sackcloth.
Putting earth upon your head.
Separating yourself from all foreigners.
Uh-huh.
That's an important one.
It is.
Confessing your sins. You know, just all... Atonement, forgiveness, racial purity, all the traditional values that you want in a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have this this long prayer.
How'd you feel about that prayer?
It's kind of nice.
I thought it was a pretty good one.
I think the first paragraph in it may be the basis for a song that I used to sing back in church when I was in the worship band in my youth group.
Back in church and days.
Yeah, church and days.
Mm-hmm.
But none of the rest of the lyrics seem to mesh with the rest of this prayer, so it may be just from a different part.
I thought the prayer was real nice.
Yeah, it was nice.
I mean, I've read a bunch of them, and they all look like this, kind of,
mm-hmm.
these Old Testament prayers.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they're getting better at them.
Yeah, I think that's true. But also, it's like it's all the same material. It's like,
yes, it is all the same material.
Thank you, God. You, mm-hmm. like... gave Abram the name Abraham and you led Moses out of Egypt. And it's like, can we just like cut the rest of the repetition? Like, just cut the rest of it and just go straight to this one. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't have to read about it like 5,000 fucking times.
In this one, Abram left the city of Ur.
Yeah, Ur of the Chaldeans.
Mm.
Was that not in previous ones?
I think it probably was, but it's just weird. What's going on in the city of Ur? That must have been a real old city.
Yeah, I mean, he's like from Iraq, like what's now Iraq.
Oh. Is he from the cradle of civilization?
Yeah, I think so. And then he becomes a monotheist.
Let out of Ur.
Unprecedented.
I want to know more about Ur, this old city.
I'm sure you could find some on Wikipedia. Did you research that on Wikipedia?
No.
Oh.
No.
That probably would have been interesting. I don't know.
Let's talk about interesting things we could have talked about.
Yeah, let's
about
talk
on the
about
podcast.
Hypothetically interesting things. Building a roller coaster.
That's not interesting.
Running
I mean,
for
it actually is pretty
Congress.
Interesting. That is interesting in a morbid kind of way.
Traveling the Amazon jungle.
It could be interesting. Could be pretty boring, I suppose.
How could it be boring?
I mean, the jungle is huge. Parts of it are not especially interesting. They're just inhospitable.
I bet they're interesting, in addition to deadly. Whatever. I hate this. I hate myself. Hate the Bible. The spirit of this long, beautiful prayer. Everyone comes together and signs an agreement not to let their daughters marry foreigners.
Yeah, they're good. They all get together and sign this thing that says they're going to follow the old ways. They're going back to the old
yeah.
ways, including
throwback TBT #TBT,
including no intermarriage. You got to send the first of the flock to God.
Yeah, all the rest of the standard shit.
Tithes to the Levites, et cetera, et cetera.
Ugh.
Oh, but then was that fun? Because
now we have a list.
Mm-hmm. 2 chapters full of the names of people who do things. They don't do anything in this chapter. This is just their names.
We did learn their names. So essential to everything, yeah, my life.
It's pretty
I'm
bad.
Changing the way I see the world due to this list of names.
Okay, I'm going to forge ahead here because Lauren is about to implode. At the end, there's a weird little segment where, so Nehemiah has apparently gone back to Babylon because he hears through the grapevine, I assume, that Eliashib or Eliashib has...
That's a priest back in Jerusalem.
It is. One of the top Levites, top Levites, mm-hmm. has apparently struck some sort of deal with Tobiah where he is like, Tobiah is now welcomed back into the temple, into the congregation, which... As you remember or may not, Nehemiah said was a no-go because Tobiah is an Ammonite.
Yeah. Yeah. We're done with foreigners right now.
Yeah.
But also he's like one of the guys who tried to fuck up building the wall.
Definitely. For that reason.
He said like a fox could knock it over, et cetera, et cetera.
That's much pettier. That doesn't have its roots in Deuteronomical law.
Well, I don't know. I think it does if he's like actively working against God's people.
Well, yeah, you could kill him.
Yeah.
Definitely shouldn't be worshiping with him though.
Well, Eliashib, or Eliashib, however you say it, was like renting out a bunch of like storage space to him.
He had a place in the temple,
in
is
the
what
temple.
It says. Which it sounds like he had an office there or
yeah,
something like
that. Yeah, it was supposed to be storage, but he was living there or something like that.
You want
to
live in the box?
He's like, he's like living out of his office.
Yeah.
He's like got a cot there.
Hasn't shaved in days.
Don't tell the boss.
So Nehemiah has to go back to Jerusalem and clean house. And in the process of kicking Tobiah out, he also reinstates the tithes for the Levites and reinforces
a couple
more.
He just fixes up all the sins. You know?
It's just like, just as a reminder, like you...
No selling wine to foreigners on the Sabbath.
Yeah. And like...
No buying fish from foreigners on the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. You got to be constantly vigilant.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can live a life guided by the law.
Yeah. And no intermarrying with foreigners.
Definitely not.
Because, quote, was it not because of marriages like these that Solomon, king of Israel, sinned?
That's a good point.
Yeah, here's what my Bible's footnote has to say about that. It says Solomon is an outstanding king in terms of wealth and political achievements. However, in later years, his foreign wives led him to worship other gods. Why is everything these wives' fault? Like, they don't even have names, but everything. Why don't we just make it illegal for women to speak? Why don't we just sew up women's vaginas? It would, like, just everything is their fault. Who cares about the king? The king's powerless. All evil emanates from these foreign wives.
You can't make any more sons that way. So that is a problem. And God did promise me that my children would be more numerous than the grains of sand on the beaches.
Did he promise that to fucking Solomon?
Yeah, that's oh. that's literally one of the covenants. That's why Solomon had like 1,000 wives. Well, he had like 700 wives and 300 concubines.
And they made him worship Chemosh.
They encouraged him.
No, they made him. It was all their fault.
Of course.
They don't even have names. Solomon is this great king, and we're going to talk all about his exploits and all the good he did. But everything bad he did is not even attributed to Satan. It's attributed to stupid wives.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end. That's the end of this fucking book.
Mm-hmm.
Morals of the story. What did we learn? One, foreigners are bad. Two, everything is bad because of foreigners. Three, expel the foreigners. Four, purify the bloodline.
Really seems to me like the message of this book was more that, like,
God will love us when we're pure enough.
No, that like, you know, rejuvenating Jerusalem takes not only, like, a spiritual effort to get closer to the book, but also, like, a physical effort to separate yourself physically from,
foreigners.
Like, the multicultural society. Like, it's important that Jews are together and that, like, Jews are in...
purity against the lesser races.
Yeah, they're in a congregation with each other.
It's like, it's kind of interesting to think that, like, when a culture is undergoing a period of economic or political or social distress or, mm-hmm. like, uncertainty, that they will always blame foreigners. Like, from the Bible to Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the name of my doctoral thesis.
From the Bible to Brexit?
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Just like, there's your scapegoat.
Except you need a colon and like five more sentences in the title.
From the Bible to Brexit.
An interdisciplinary interrogation of
genetic purity.
Oh, no.
Yo, that's what it is.
You're going to have to go back to school to find better words to describe that then.
You're right. It does need a euphemism. Another thing we've learned is if you take the exact same rhetoric from the other books of the Bible, it's all about legitimizing religious law and glorifying the nation of Israel,
mm-hmm.
But you put it in first person, you sound like a real asshole.
Yeah, it sounds stupid.
Yeah.
You sound like a real sanctimonious piece of shit.
Yeah.
The least humble thing you can do is point out how humble you are.
Yeah.
And this dude does it a bunch of times. Ezra made it through without mentioning how humble and brilliant he was, didn't he?
I think he may have done the exact same thing. It's just that his didn't start till like two-thirds of the way through the book.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's just like when you get too much of it, it becomes way more obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, though.
I mean, it just goes to show that like some of these, this isn't necessarily a parable exactly, but it's supposed to illuminate some religious lesson for us. And if you try to like inhabit one of the characters in these religious lessons, it like doesn't make sense.
Oh boy. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it's like very,
but it doesn't make the sense that they want it to make, because this is like a narcissist,
yeah,
like sanctimonious asshole that, I mean, everyone would hate.
It reads like just every person on the internet who sucks. It reads like a comment section full of sanctimonious assholes.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, do you want to rate this book?
Sure. Yeah, let's rate this
book. Do you have more to talk about?
No. I mean, not unless you do.
I don't.
Okay.
How would you rate this book?
I would give this book 12 out of 36 Dungates.
Okay. Would you care to explain further?
Yes. So a Dungate, I presume, is the place where the city shits.
Yeah.
I guess.
Maybe like the dump, like the city dump.
I don't know. Anyway, I give it 12 out of 36 because it had some nice prayers in it. I thought those prayers were actually...
It had one nice prayer.
It had one nice prayer in it. Okay.
Let's not exaggerate. Let's not give too much credit here.
Also, it mostly moved along, except for a couple of lists, which I figure are kind of de rigueur. And... Well, the main character wasn't very interesting, Nehemiah. I did like the idea of these three Persians, like, trying to scuttle his plans.
Why?
I don't know. It gives me it makes me think of a more interesting story that might be told.
It's true. It's very, like, personal and human.
Yeah.
There's, like, a real, like, story going on there, like a narrative related to people's dumb foibles. And... Yeah,
which they effectively resist in the actual telling of it.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is just bad. I mean, yeah, it's like repeated stuff and lists of names.
Yep.
And I don't like the idea that they're already hearkening back to an older time, you know, that like they're like looking at Abrahamic Judaism and they're like, oh, those were the days when everything was so pure.
Yeah.
And it's like, then we have people looking back to people that are looking back to people looking back yeah. to these people.
Yeah.
And it's like.
And it's like, great, now we're Nigel Farage.
Yeah, kind of. I was thinking more on the religious side than on the political side.
Oh, okay.
But that people are always looking back to older times and being like, this, it was so much better then, it was so much less complicated or whatever, that there used to be this set of rules that worked, when in fact there's no set of rules that always works, that like human life is constantly changing. And
well, yeah, I mean, I'm even if you like take that at face value uh-huh. and look at like the previous books in the Bible, they have the exact same fucking problems. It's like, oh, they were intermarrying and worshiping the wrong gods. The Levites weren't getting their correct tithes. Like, people stopped observing the Sabbath correctly. Like, it's the exact same problems. There is no purer, happier precedent.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you want to go back to Eden, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's, like, there is the reign of just and wise kings. But even then, like, the country... Like, Israel wasn't at peace,
yeah.
you know? They were just in offensive wars as opposed to defensive wars.
Yeah. Well, both.
Yeah, both, most likely.
Yeah.
Anyway, how would you rate the book?
I don't know, like a 1 out of 12 foxes, because it's just lists and bullshit and racism.
Okay.
I stayed up so late reading it.
I'm sorry.
There's not enough cheap vodka in the world to make up. For the Book of Nehemiah.
We'll see about that.
Yeah, okay, let's go find out if there's enough.
Okay. But before we do that, we have some important things to discuss.
We do?
Yes.
Okay.
First of all, you can follow us on Twitter at SunSchoolDrop on Twitter, at SunSchoolDrop.
Yep.
You can also find us on Facebook. We are Sunday School Dropouts. Just look for that awesome dove, which was designed by our good friend and collaborator, Elise Carlton. Thank you very much to her for
our
logo and art.
Thank you to Nico for our sound editing and music and everything.
You're very welcome.
We're also on Facebook, Sunday School Dropouts.
I said that.
I meant to say we're on the internet at a website, and that website is sundayschooldropouts.lol.
sundayschooldropouts.lol.
If you want to send us kudos or cheers, send them to contact@sundayschooldropouts.lol. And if you want to rate and review us on iTunes, we would be extremely grateful. That is the lifeblood of podcasts.
Mm-hmm. It's the number one way you can help other people find the show. Again, that's rating or reviewing on the iTunes store. That's clicking on that little button that says how many wall foxes you would give it out of 5.
Yeah.
And writing a little sentence about it, like saying, you know, wood fox again.
Yeah.
Wall foxes forever, for example.
5 out of 5 wall foxes.
Etc.
Just, yeah. Anything that you have to say about wall foxes.
Agreed.
Just tell us about any foxes that you saw.
So Lauren is angry.
I would rather be talking about foxes right now, frankly. Even though they're kind of weird looking.
Kind of weird looking?
Yeah,
like,
have you ever seen a fox? Like a fox up close? They're like in the uncanny valley of dogs. They're like a dog in the uncanny valley.
Okay. I can sort of see what you're saying.
But like, it's fine. They're cool. Like, you know.
I think you may be just confronting some of your own
prejudices against foxes. No, I like foxes.
Loved
Zootopia.
If you just loved
Fantastic Mr. Fox.
If you assume everything dog-shaped is should look like a dog, then you're going to be like, you're going to feel disappointed when they don't.
No, but I mean, like, wolves look really good.
They're very dog-like, though.
But then foxes are, like, they're, like, not really wolves, and they're, like, not really dogs, and they've got, like, these weird yellow eyes. Like,
they're foxes. Can't you just let them be foxes? They look very fox-like, don't you think?
Well, like...
A what?
Kind of, like, when you see, like, a fox in real life, it's, like, different from, like, the cartoon foxes.
I see. This is all going back to you watching Robin Hood when you were a kid and falling in love with that weird fox.
Oh, you're right. Oh, I have some stuff to discuss in therapy this week.
Who doesn't? Anyway, we're going to sign off now.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Nico.
And we'll see you on Sunday.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.